Chapter 4. Shortly after the trial of auricular confession, my young friend Louis Cazot accosted me and said, "Do you know what happened last night?" "No," I answered. "You know that our priest spends almost all his evenings at Mr. Richard's house. Everybody thinks that he goes there for the sake of the two daughters. Well, in order to cure him, my uncle Dr. Tash and six others masked and whipped him without mercy as he was coming back at 11 o'clock at night. It is already known by everyone in the village, and they split their sides laughing." My first feeling was one of joy. His questions had so wounded me that I could not forgive him. However, I concealed my pleasure and answered, "You are telling me a wicked story. I can't believe a word of it." "Well," said young Cazot, "come at 8 o'clock this evening to my uncle's. A secret meeting is to take place then. No doubt they will speak of the pill given to the priest last night. We shall place ourselves as usual and hear everything. You may be sure that it will be interesting." "I will go," I answered, "but I do not believe a word of that story." At school, most of the pupils were grouped in lively conversation and convulsive laughter. Something uncommon had taken place in the village. I approached several of these groups, and all received me with the question, "Do you know that the priest was whipped last night as he was coming from the Mrs. Richards?" "That is a story invented for fun," said I. "If anybody had whipped the priest, he would not surely boast of it." "But we heard his screams," answered many voices. "But you were surely mistaken about the voice," said I. "But," said several, "we ran to his help and we recognized the priest's voice. He is the only one who lisps in the village." "And we saw him with our own eyes," said several. The school bell put an end to this conversation. As soon as school was out, I returned home and found my uncle and aunt engaged in a very warm debate. My uncle wished to conceal the fact that he was among those who had whipped the priest, but he gave the details so precisely, he was so merry over the adventure, that it was easy to see that he had a hand in the plot. My aunt was indignant. That bitter debate annoyed me so that I withdrew to my study. I changed my resolution many times about going to the secret meeting in the evening. I had refused to go to the last two meetings, and a silent voice told me I had done well. Then I was tormented by the desire to know precisely what had taken place. A quarter hour before the meeting, my friend came and said, "Make haste, the members of the association are coming." All my good resolutions vanished, and a few minutes later I was placed in an angle of that little room where I learned so many strange and scandalous things about the lives of the priests of Canada. Dr. Tosh presided. He was naturally eloquent, and he spoke with the deepest conviction. His short and cutting sentences penetrated even the secret folds of the soul. He spoke in substance as follows: "Gentlemen, I am happy to see you here more numerously than ever. The grave events of last night, which have, no doubt, decided many of you to attend debates which some begin to forsake, but the importance of which, it seems, increases day by day. The question debated in our last meeting, the priest, is one of life and death, not only for our young and beautiful Canada, but morally for our families and for every one of us. There is, I know, only one opinion among us on the subject of priests. I am glad that this opinion is held by all educated men in Canada and France, nay, of the whole world. The reign of the priest is the reign of ignorance, corruption, and the most barefaced immorality, under the mask of the most refined hypocrisy. The reign of the priest is the death of our schools. It is the degradation of our wives, the prostitution of our daughters. It is the reign of tyranny, the loss of liberty. We have only one good school in all our country, and it is a great honor to our village. Now see how energetically all the priests who come here work for the closing of that school. They use every means to destroy that focus of light which we support by so many sacrifices. With the priest of Rome, our children do not belong to us. He is their master. Let me explain. The priest honors us with the belief that the bodies, the flesh, the bones of our children are ours, and that our duty in consequence is to clothe and feed them. But the nobler and more sacred part, the intellect, the heart, the soul, the priest claims as his property. The priest has the audacity to tell us that to him alone it belongs to enlighten those intelligences, to form those hearts, to fashion those souls as it may best suit him. He has the impudence to tell us that we are too silly or perverse to know our duties in this respect. We have not the right of choosing our school teachers. We have not the right to give to those souls who hunger and thirst after truth a single crumb of that food prepared with so much wisdom and success by enlightened men of all ages. By the confessional, the priests poison the springs of life in our children. They initiate them into such mysteries of iniquity as would terrify old galley slaves. Before I was 15 years old, I had learned more real black guardianism from the mouth of my confessor than I have learned since in my studies and in my life as a physician for 20 years. A few days ago, I questioned my little nephew, Louis Cazot, what he had learned in his confession. He repeated things which I would be ashamed to utter in your presence, and which you, fathers of families, could not listen to without blushing. Not only of little boys are these questions asked, but also of our dear little girls. Are we not the most degraded of men if we do not break the iron yoke under which the priests keep our dear country, and by means of which he keeps us with our wives and children at his feet like vile slaves? Shall I forget its effects upon our wives and upon ourselves? Need I tell you that for most women the confessional is a rendezvous of coquetry and of love? Do you not feel as I do, that by means of the confessional, the priest is more the master of the hearts of our wives than ourselves? Do not our wives go invariably to the feet of the priest, opening to him the most sacred and intimate secrets of our lives as husbands and fathers? The husband is no more his wife's guide through the dark and difficult paths of life. It is the priest. We are no more their friends and natural advisers. Their anxieties and cares they do not confide to us. They do not expect from us the remedies for the miseries of this life. Towards the priest they turn their thoughts and desires. He has their entire and exclusive confidence. In a word, it is the priest who is the real husband of our wives. It is he who possesses the respect and their hearts to a degree which none, no one of us, need ever aspire. Were the priest an angel, were he not flesh and bones just as we are, then might we be indifferent to what might take place between him and our wives, whom he has at his feet, in his hands, even more in his heart. But what does my experience tell me, not only as a physician, but also as a citizen of St. Thomas? What does yours tell you? Our experience tells us that the priest, instead of being stronger, is weaker than we generally are with respect to women. His sham vows of perfect chastity, far from rendering him more invulnerable to the arrows of Cupid, make him more easily the victim. In fact, of the last four priests who came to St. Thomas, have not three seduced many of the wives and daughters of our most respectable families? Is not the whole parish filled with indignation at the long nightly visits made by our present priest to two girls whose dissolute morals are a secret to nobody? At our last meeting, many thought it would be well to speak to the bishop about the scandal caused by those nightly visits, but the majority judged that the bishop would either pay no attention to our complaint or replace him with one no better. That majority became unanimous that we take justice into our own hands. The priest is our servant. We pay him a large tithe. We have therefore claims upon him. He has abused us by his public neglect of the most elementary laws of morality. His nightly visits give our youth an example of perversity, the effects of which no one can estimate. It was unanimously decided that he should be whipped. Without my telling you by whom it was done, you may be assured that Mr. Bobon's flagellation of last night will never be forgotten by him. Heaven grant that this brotherly correction will teach all the priests of Canada that their golden reign is over, that the eyes of the people are opened, and that their domination is drawing to an end. This disclosure was listened to with deep silence, and Dr. Tash saw by the applause that his speech had been the expression of everyone. Next followed a gentleman named Dubourg, who in substance spoke as follows: Mr. President, I was not among those who gave the priest this expression of public feeling with the energetic tongue of the whip. I wish I had been. However, I would hardly have cooperated in giving that lesson to the priests of Canada. Let me give you my reason. My daughter, who is 12 years old, went to confession with the others a few weeks ago. It was against my will. I know by my own experience that of all actions, confession is the most degrading in a person's life. Why are Roman Catholic nations inferior to Protestant ones? The oftener the individuals in these nations go to confession, the more rapidly they sink in intelligence and morality. A terrible example of this I had in my own house. As I said, I was against my daughter going to confession, but her poor mother, who is under the control of the priest, earnestly wanted her to go. Not to have a disagreeable scene, I had to yield to the tears of my wife. On the day following, they believed I was absent, but I was in my office with the door sufficiently open to hear what was said. My wife and daughter had the following conversation. What makes you so thoughtful and sad, my dear Lucy, since you went to confession? It seems to me you should feel happier since confessing your sins. Lucy made no answer. After a silence of 2 or 3 minutes, her mother said, Why do you weep, dear child? Are you ill? Still no answer from the child. Of course, I was all attention. I had my suspicions about the dreadful ordeal which had taken place. My heart throbbed with uneasiness and anger. After a short time, my wife spoke with sufficient firmness to force her to answer. In a trembling voice and half suppressed with sobs, my dear little daughter answered, Oh, Mama, if you knew what the priest asked me and what he said to me in the confessional, you would be as sad as I am. But what did he say to you? He is a holy man. You surely did not understand him if you think he said anything to pain you. Dear mother, as she threw herself into her mother's arms, do not ask me to confess what the priest said. He told me things so shameful that I cannot repeat them. But that which pains me most is the impossibility of banishing from my thoughts the hateful things which he has taught me. His impure words are like the leeches put upon the chest of my friend Louis. They could not be removed without tearing the flesh. What must have been his opinion of me to ask such questions? My child said no more and began to sob again. After a short silence, my wife rejoined, I'll go to the priest. I'll tell him to beware how he speaks in the confessional. I have noticed myself that he goes too far with his questions. I, however, thought that he was more prudent with children. I ask of you, however, never to speak of this to anybody, especially your poor father, for he has little enough religion already, and this would leave him without any at all. I could contain myself no longer. I abruptly entered the parlor. My daughter threw herself weeping into my arms. My wife screamed with terror and almost fell into a swoon. I said to my child, if you love me, put your hand on my heart and promise me that you will never go to confession again. Fear God, my child. Walk in his presence, for his eye seeth you everywhere. Day and night he is ready to forgive us. Never place yourself again at the feet of a priest to be defiled and degraded by him. This my daughter promised me. When my wife had recovered from her surprise, I said to her, Madam, for a long time the priest has been everything, and your husband nothing to you. There is a hidden and terrible power that governs your thoughts, affections, and deeds. It is the power of the priest. This you have often denied, but Providence has decided today that this power should be forever broken for you and me. I want to be the ruler of my own house, and from this moment the power of the priest over you must cease, unless you prefer to leave my house forever. The priest has reigned here too long, but now that I know he has stained and defiled the soul of my daughter, his empire must fall. If you again go and take your heart and secrets to the feet of the priest, be so kind as not to come back to the same house with me. Three other discourses followed, all pregnant with details and facts to prove that the confessional was the principal cause of the deplorable demoralization of St. Thomas.